Okay, it is 10:01 and the recording is on.
Want to do a roll call?
Yes. Okay. Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Ms. Steinisch?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
And I'm Monica Crowley. And Mr. Harris is also present.
Great. Thank you. Okay, we will continue on here with agenda item number 9. We're on B, case 2429, Tony Martinez, PT.
Yes, and Mr. Martinez is present. Hi, Ms. Martinez. Thank you for being here. On July 4th, 2021, Mr. Martinez was arrested for disorderly conduct, domestic violence. He pled guilty in September of 21 and received court order sentencing, which included DV assessment. He paid restitution and attended 26 domestic violence classes. He stated that he had satisfied all conditions of his plea agreement. But however, he did not report his arrest or charges within the 10-day regulatory requirement. When he completed his license renewal for the 24-26 period, he did answer correctly yes to question one on the application and provided a narrative response and attached multiple documents supporting the narrative statement. However, on his 2022 renewal, which was the next renewal period after his sentencing, he answered no to the question one and question nine on that application. So you reviewed the matter at your December meeting as a preliminary review, and you identified it and you decided to open a case and identified the following potential violations. ARS 323208, which is the mandatory reporting requirement statute, and ARS 322443, obtaining or attempting to obtain a license by fraud or misrepresentation. Mr. Martinez provided a supplemental written statement and supporting documents for your consideration. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Martinez, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Absolutely, yes.
Great, thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Martinez?
Mr. Martinez, this is Mr. Greer. Why did you decline to report this on the 2022 renewal? And I guess that, yeah, that's my question.
Yeah, I'm trying to reflect back, and I do remember thinking I don't really have a valid reason why I would not have. And I was thinking this last renewal form, it seemed to be different. And it, when I did find the area to check it, it gave me a box to comment, but I don't recall the second time. So I apologize. I don't have a valid reason. It wasn't intentional. I wish I could answer that with. More clarity. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? I'm going to move that we issue Mr. Martinez an advisory letter regarding reporting on renewal.
Can we also include reporting on application? Yeah, reporting within a 10-day period. Sorry.
Yes, of course.
It seems like a terrible experience of all the things that happened. And, losing a house and all the circumstances is awful, but there's also the the rules. And so
I agree.
So very sorry that all that happened.
Lesson learned. I took this very serious.
Any other discussion?
Monica, do you want me to summarize the motion?
Yes, please.
Okay, everybody ready to call the vote? Okay, it's been... Oh,
who did the second? I apologize.
Naomi.
Thank you.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to issue an advisory letter in case 2429, Tony Martinez, to the advisory letter to include reminder to follow the law as it relates to reporting requirements for misdemeanors and reportable misdemeanors, and also on the license renewal. Dr. Basile?
And within the 10-day reporting period.
Correct, and within the 10-day reporting regulatory requirement. Thank you. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
And Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you, Mr. Martinez, with everything.
Thank you. And moving forward, am I still able to practice? And okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
And then we'll move on to case number 2431, Pamela Pino.
Ms. Pino, are you present today?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. Thanks.
All right. This is case 2431. Dr. Pino received a non-disciplinary order by the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy, which was case 1962. That was executed in November of 2020. However, there was no evidence that she affirmed this when she completed her 2022 or her 2024 renewals. She answered no to question three on both of those renewal applications. And the question was, have you ever been under investigation, suspension, or restriction by a professional licensing board in any jurisdiction that would be subject of discipline under this chapter? You reviewed this as a preliminary review at your December meeting, and you identified the following potential violation of ARS 3224443, obtaining or attempting to obtain a license by fraud or misrepresentation. Ms. Pino did provide additional written statements as to why she did not accurately complete her 2022 and 2024 renewal applications. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Pino, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I am.
Great. Does anyone have any questions? Yeah, I feel like, with your written response, you were able to outline, you know, the reasons that you didn't report on your 2022 and 24 renewal applications. And I'll move that we send Ms. Pino an advisory letter again regarding reporting on renewal applications.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay. Whenever you're ready, Mindy.
It has been moved and seconded to issue an advisory letter in case 2431, Pamela Pino. The advisory letter is to emphasize the importance of reporting previous disciplinary action on renewal applications. Is that sufficient?
I think so.
Mr. Harris?
I think so, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
And Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Pino, for being here.
Okay. Can I ask what the advisory letter is or what I have to do with it? Or?
It's for your records and for our records, showing that there was an issue with your renewal applications and that we're acknowledging that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, and Ms. Pino, it's a non-disciplinary letter advising you of the board's concerns regarding your failure to report. And in the future, if you should do so, it indicates that they may view the same facts a little bit differently.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Probably good to get have that clarification too, so thank you.
Well, you guys have a good day. Thank you.
You too. And then we will move on to agenda item 10, PT Compact Matters Review, Consideration and Action, case 2432, Nicole Lawson, PTA.
All right, I believe Ms. Lawson is on the call this morning. Nicole, are you on the call?
I am, yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The allegation is that Nicole Lawson, PTA, worked using an Arizona compact privilege after establishing residency by obtaining an Arizona driver's license on August 28, 2023. Compact rules require privilege holders to notify the compact commission of a change of home state address within 60 business days of the change, and therefore she should have notified the compact of her address change on or before November 24, 2023, which would have terminated her compact privilege. However, she continued to work as a PTA at a job that requires her to have a professional clinical license until October 30th, 2024, when she became aware that she could not work using an Arizona compact privilege after obtaining an Arizona driver's license. The potential violations identified in the investigative report include ARS 32-2044-1, violating this chapter, board rules, or a written board order, ARS 32-2053, Physical Therapy Licensure Compact, as it relates to Compact Rules 1.1L. Home state means a person's true fixed and permanent home and is the place where the person intends to remain indefinitely and to which the person expects to return if absent without intending to establish a new domicile elsewhere. And 3.1C, in addition to complying with reporting name and address change as required by the home state, the compact privilege holders must also notify the commission of a change of name and or home state address within 60 business days of the change. ARS 32-2048, unlawful practice, and as identified in the investigative report, the board is requested to consider ARS 32-2042E. A person shall not use the title physical therapist assistant or use the letters PTA in connection with that person's name or any other words, abbreviations, or insignia indicating or implying directly or indirectly that the person is a physical therapist assistant unless that person is licensed as a physical therapist assistant pursuant to this chapter. A person who violates a subsection is guilty of a class 1 misdemeanor. Ms. Lawson was provided a copy of the draft investigative report, and this matter is for your review.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Lawson, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I am.
Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Lawson?
And Ms. Lawson, are you currently working as a PTA?
Yeah, so I work as a clinical liaison. I don't actually do any direct patient care, but yes, I use my credentials as PTA in that role.
Okay. What do you do as a liaison?
Yeah, so I review clinical documentation such as PT evals, progress notes, and medical records to help determine whether a patient meets criteria for an acute rehab facility. And I present the information to a PM&R physician. And the PM&R ultimately makes the admission decision. So I don't make any clinical decisions about patient care. Yes.
Okay. And then are you currently living in Arizona? I know in your letter you had mentioned that you might be moving back to Colorado at some point.
Yes, yeah. my hope was to get back to Colorado, but you know, life keeps happening, and so Arizona's going to be pretty permanent for a while now.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Ms. Lawson, this is Joshua Guerra. I guess, do you still have an Arizona driver's license?
I have an Arizona driver's license now, correct, yes.
And where do you consider your state of residence right now?
Arizona.
Okay. In August of 2023, when you obtained a Arizona driver's license, did you consider Arizona to be your state of residence at that time?
No, so I was, I obtained the Arizona driver's license for practical reasons. This is completely my fault for not checking the rules of the compact. My Colorado driver's license had expired on my birthday. And so I obtained the Arizona driver's license since I was working here. I was trying to live like a snowbird type of life and failing at that, but that is what I was hoping to do. And then I was hoping to return to Colorado. And so that's how I kind of got myself in this big mess.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any thoughts on a motion?
I would move that we offer Ms. Lawson a consent agreement pursuant to our unlawful practice matrix. I think she would be the, you know, I would do the 31 to 90 days, so $315 civil penalty, jurisprudence exam, provide evidence of having notified employers, payers, and patients in an ethics course. If she does not accept that, I would invite her back for an informal hearing.
Second.
How many hours of ethics?
I don't know. What do we normally give for the matrix?
I think 3.
And do you have a time frame for all of that?
1 year to complete.
Okay. And is that 1 year of probation or just 1 year to complete?
It is probation.
Okay. Yeah. And with or without option for early termination?
With.
Okay.
Yeah. The matrix specifies with early termination as well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I believe I have it then. And that was already seconded, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded in the case number 2432. Before I do that, as far as the statutes that were identified in the investigative report, are we okay with the ARS 3220441, the 3220053 as it relates to 1.1L, 3.1C, and then the 3220042E?
I'm good with that.
So that's okay like that?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That is okay like that.
Okay, thank you. It has been moved and seconded in case number 2432 to find Nicole Lawson PTA in violation of ARS 32-2044-1, ARS 32-2053 as it relates to compact rules 1.1L and 3.1C, and ARS 32-2042E, and to offer her a consent agreement to include 1 year of probation with the option of early termination, a civil penalty of $315, jurisprudence exam, provide evidence of having notified employers, patients, and third-party payers of practicing without a PTA license, and 3 hours of continuing education in the area of ethics. And if she does not accept this consent agreement, she will be invited back for an informal hearing. Did that cover it, Mr. Harris?
Yes.
Okay. So Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
And Mr. Barton?
Yes.
All right. That motion passes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a question about the notifications of patients. So would I just notify then my employer since I was not, treating patients?
Madam Chair, members of the board, if it's okay, maybe Ms. Lawson can contact Judy after the board meeting to discuss further.
Sounds great.
Okay, I can do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lawson.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Good luck with all that. Okay, we have no old business. And it looks like then we get to move on to our presentation with Steve Allison and Rick Wickstrom.
Okay. I apologize. I'm a little nervous.
It's okay.
I don't know if Ms. Kayla Black is on the call. No? Okay. Ms. Kayla Black, Government Affairs Committee Chair for the APTAAZ, requested that the board agendize a presentation by Dr. Steve Allison and Dr. Rick Wickstrom regarding physical therapists as medical examiners for the Department of Transportation, physical examiners through the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Provided as a separate file in your review material is the informational packet received from the presentators. Additionally, in 2020, the board received a request from the association for the board to issue a position statement regarding FMSSCA. As a board does not possess authority to issue position statements. The 2020 request and response are attached in this memo.
So. Monica, I'm not sure if Jim Linsky is representing Kayla Black.
I'm here representing Kayla. Kayla won't be able to join the meeting for another 35 minutes. Monica did a good job in doing the introduction. Rick and Steve are on the meeting. I see they're muted, and their cameras are off. So, I was just hoping that I sent them an email hoping that they can, unmute and turn their cameras on and do their, presentation.
Hey, this is Steve Allison, and looks like my camera is on unless it's not showing up. Okay, good.
And this is Rick Wickstrom, and my camera's on as well.
I had a PowerPoint presentation. Is there a way I can screen share?
Let me take a peek here. Let's see. Settings. Uh,
Okay.
I know there's a way, so let me see.
Mike, I went ahead and gave him co-host, so he should be able to present now.
Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right. So the
Steve, we're seeing your presenter view. You may want to just switch to split settings.
Okay. Try that again. Stop.
No, when you were doing that, all you had to do click up top was under display settings, switch it.
Oh, okay. Let me see.
No. There we go.
We're good. Okay. All right. Well, Rick, I'll let you get started and then I'll move in from there.
Sure. And thank you for the opportunity to present. I've been asked multiple times to serve on our Ohio licensing board and I do appreciate the work that goes into your volunteer task. Currently I'm serving as the immediate past president of the Occupational Health Special Interest Group, which is a special interest group or SIG in the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy, now called APTA Orthopedic. And I also serve as the research chair in my current service, but a big part of our service in the Occupational Health Special Interest Group is we've created a state resource liaison type of program where we can do reach outs to practices about excellence in practice that relate to occupational health, and also have engaged chapters and also at times licensing board in educating them about some of the emerging new practice opportunities for physical therapists. Steve, go ahead and change over to the next slide. I actually had the opportunity several years back to work with James Spencer, who was the chief delegate at that time, to introduce a new motion on access to physical therapists as entry point practitioners for activity participation, wellness, health, and disability determination. And so this was an aspirational position type of statement, but it's quite relevant to the talk that Steve and I are going to present today that relates to DOT physical exams. And go ahead and go to the next slide, Steve. This motion that I co-led with James Spencer actually influenced a change in the FSBPT Model Practice Act to introduce some new language that talked about our expertise as physical therapists to perform participation-focused physical examinations to promote and maintain fitness and health and wellness. So this is truly a safety issue. When DOT physical exams have been traditionally done, they've been done by like physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and even chiropractors who don't take a functional approach to evaluation and determinations of fitness for duty. So adding physical therapists into the mix with our background is a very helpful step, and it also recognizes the expertise that we get through our educational program that is participation focused. So my personal story is that when COVID struck And my private practice shut down. One of the things that I did was I took the mandatory education, become a certified medical examiner and set for a national board exam that is refereed by Federal Motor Carrier Safety Association. And part of that process involved obtaining a clarification letter from my Ohio Physical Therapy Licensing Board, which they were quite great about complying with in a pretty short time period because of, some of the just issues that we're facing all physical therapists with COVID. So after I did that, I also took the next step of establishing a practice in Kentucky, and Steve Allison and I, Steve has been my mentor. When I was the president of the orthopedic, the occupational health special interest group, Steve was also distinguished by being the first physical therapist to be a DOT physical examiner in Louisiana. So he mentored me in the process, and then we've subsequently mentored a number of other therapists in other state chapters as well. So I consider Steve to be still my mentor in this area of physical exam process. And I'm going to kind of hand the reins over to him just like I handed over. He's currently the president of the Occupational Health Special Interest Group. So, but he's done thousands of these exams. I've done a lesser number of them, but we'd like to share with you our experiences and why we believe that it's appropriate for the licensing board in Arizona to issue the clarification type of letter that's needed to allow a physical therapist in your state who's licensed to proceed with getting their board certification and being qualified to do these exams.
Thanks, Rick. So just kind of an overview of the FMCSA. They are the parent agency or administration for the U.S. Department of Transportation and some other departments. But so what we're talking about is, the U.S. Department of Transportation and doing physical examinations or fitness for duty exams for truck drivers and commercial bus drivers. And prior to 2012, the FMCSA really didn't have a certification process. So anyone that was a licensed healthcare professional and performing physical exams were within the scope of practice for them, they could become a medical examiner. But in 2012, they changed the process up and required some training and certification, kind of with the goal to have competent medical examiners out there that were following the same set of standards and could ensure safe highways and that truck drivers were actually fit for duty. This is what a medical examiner certificate looks like. Basically, checking off here based on the exam findings, whether or not the individual would be required to wear corrective lenses, hearing aids, or to have some other type of evaluation, a skill performance evaluation or something else. And the maximum time that a truck driver or bus driver can be certified is 2 years. And it's common to see drivers that have high blood pressure or diabetes or some other condition, and the regs require limiting those individuals to 1 year certifications. So the path, the DOT medical examiner path to certification it's a four-step process, and there's one major bump in the road that, that I experienced in Louisiana and others have experienced. And that is after the first step, there is the state board would be contacted by the FMCSA to verify scope of practice to perform physical exams. So in Louisiana, what happened for me in 2015, or actually I started the process in 2014, I went to the FMCSA website to register. That triggered the the FMCSA to send a letter to the board along with some documentation asking if it was within the scope of practice for PTs licensed in Louisiana to perform physical exams that were required by the DOT, Department of Transportation. And unfortunately, what happened was the board responded that it was not within the scope of practice because they really didn't understand the whole process and the training and the examination and et cetera. So many months went by, and I finally talked to someone at the FMCSA and found out that the board had issued a negative letter. So I ended up setting up a meeting with us, with our board, and the board attorney present, made my case, did a presentation, and they reversed the ruling at that point and issued another letter to clarify that it was within the scope of practice for PTs in Louisiana to perform these exams. But so, you know, that's the kicker, is that letter coming by and for the board to have an understanding of kind of what the whole process is and what the requirements are and why we believe that it is within the scope of practice for PTs. So if you go to the registration, or the FMCSA website and click on the register, what will pop up is there will be some questions about which state are you practicing in, what is your medical profession, and you can see that these are all highlighted in green, which means that in Louisiana, either a doctor of physical therapy or physical therapist, which is an important point to make out too, is that when you make a decision and issue a letter, because the FMCSA has these, has physical therapist and doctor of physical therapy separated, that the letter should address both. So if we look at Arizona, then what happens is we get this kind of this orange or caution here telling us that you're attempting to register for a profession in the state that may not be eligible for certification and listing on the national registry. So this will turn green once we get this hopefully approved in Arizona. Now, there is a glitch on the FMCSA website. So if we chose physical therapist instead of doctor of physical therapy, it's telling us here that you're attempting to register for a profession in the state that's not eligible for certification, and that at some point it's telling us here that the state medical licensing board has informed FMCSA that the scope of practice for the profession you've entered does not allow you to perform it. So we know that y'all have not issued any, or we think we know that y'all have not issued any type of letter that said that it was not within the scope of practice. So this is an error, and we see it, you know, across many states that this will pop up like this. So you'll get the packet from the state board once someone in Arizona decides, I know there's someone interested there in becoming a DOT medical examiner, and you'll get a packet of information. And we're just asking as a SIG that, you know, after this presentation, to consider sending that clarification letter to the FMCSA that these type of exams are within the scope of practice. So these are sample letters that have been sent from the Kentucky board and the North Carolina board to note that it's within the scope of practice. And this is kind of the current state of the state for DOT medical exams. All the green states, the licensing boards have issued letters that it's within the scope of practice, and the orange states are the ones where we have some initiatives going on. We have a few other states where there's initiatives as well. I think Arkansas was the first state, followed by Texas, and then Louisiana, and then Kentucky and Ohio. So this is kind of what happens after you complete all the required training. You pass the board, the national board exam. You'll get issued a certificate that basically, you know, acknowledges that you've met all those requirements and standards. So a key thing to understand here is that the fundamental obligation of a certified DOT medical examiner is to determine fitness for duty. And it's not our role to diagnose or to treat a medical condition. So we're basically looking at truck drivers or commercial bus drivers and looking at their medical history, performing a physical exam, and then make a determination of whether or not they are physically fit for duty. This is the standard health history questionnaire that is required to be used by the FMCSA. And anything that's checked, we're required to at that point go into more detail and get more information about what that condition is. This is kind of a section that's caused some issues. I think this is the section for Louisiana that they caused them initially some concerns that wasn't within the scope of practice, and that's going to be the urinalysis section here and some of the hearing and vision testing. But the urinalysis is basically like a dipstick test. So the driver would basically pee in a cup and you dip the stick in there and you're looking for evidence of, you know, protein or blood, sugar, getting specific gravity measurement. This is something that you don't really receive training from FMCSA with this. This is something that you can get trained, you know, look at it online, and there are other ways to do it, but it doesn't require any type of professional license to do this type of test. You could do your own, you know, check your ketones at home if you're on a, you know, high protein diet, low carb. And so it's just basically the same thing. Visual acuity, it's just using a Snellen chart or some other type of eye chart to look at visual acuity and also looking at horizontal field of vision, looking at the ability to recognize green, red, and orange. And then the whisper, the hearing test is just a forced whisper test. The details really on both of the vision and hearing are provided. The training is provided for that in the requirements. And this is the physical exam. So there's 14 different body systems that are examined. And just basically if there's normal or abnormal, and if there's abnormal findings, what those findings were. And we'll look at these body systems and then compare that to what's required for licensure and in the education programs. So all of the systems that we saw on the DOT physical exam are currently included in the DPT professional education programs. And this is from the Federation of State Board of PT, kind of these different body systems and the number of questions related to the exam, evaluation, differential diagnosis, and interventions for those different systems. And this is the current FMCSA DOT medical examiner's certification test content outline. So looking at, you know, the level of cognitive ability or requirements to perform a physical exam and evaluation. So this is an example of one of the questions on the DOT medical examiner's certification exam. So if you'll look at that, you see that there's a driver that's complaining of severe pain in his finger for the last 2 weeks after it was punctured. The examination revealed an infected, swollen finger. The examiner inquires, the driver states that the pain is made worse when he grips the steering wheel. So which of the following should the medical examiner do next? Obtain a hand x-ray, assess capillary refill, obtain a culture and sensitivity, or assess the driver's grip strength. And the correct answer is assessing the driver's grip strength. So it just points out that our role is not to diagnose or to treat, but to determine fitness for duty. Is there a condition that might interfere with the ability of that driver to safely operate a commercial motor vehicle? And there are standards. So when you go through the training, there's a DOT medical examiner handbook that you have, and there's standards that we all follow. So if there's an individual that comes in, and their blood pressure is in the range from 140 to 159, up 90 over 99 on the diastolic end, then we can certify them for 1 year on their, and there's no history of high blood pressure. We can certify them for up to 1 year. And then when we see them back for recertification, it's a one-time 3-month certification. But we have some different standards and regulations that we follow from the FMCSA. And here's all the references that relate to the slides in today's presentation. We'd be happy to take any questions.
Do you know how many PTs are currently serving in this role?
I don't. I don't know that there's any way to track that information outside of, you know, us trying to do maybe a survey through the OSIG, but we may not capture all the people that are doing it.
Full disclosure, I know Steve and Rick, and I've worked with them for the Academy of Orthopedics. In terms of Steve's working in Louisiana. How many do you think in Louisiana, if you were to guess, are doing it in Louisiana?
I don't know, maybe half dozen or so. Over the last, you know, I started the process in 2015, and so probably a half dozen or so.
Okay, so not very many people.
No, I think a lot of people just aren't aware of it. It's, you know, it's a relatively unique area of practice. So that's one of the things that we're doing is trying to make more PTs aware of this opportunity in occupational health.
And then it doesn't usually go through insurance, I think, is one of the things. It's actual commercial truck drivers that are coming to you. Is that correct?
That's correct. So it's either the employer sends an authorization for us to see their truck drivers, or it's self-pay. So you have independent truck drivers that, you know, come in and pay for the exam to be done.
And I just understand the cost of the physical is in the neighborhood of anywhere between $80 and $130. It's not an expensive examination. They ask for quite a lot of information for the amount of time that we spend professionally, but from my perspective, it's an entry point, an important entry point exam, because it's an opportunity for the physical therapist to be introduced to the truck driver. We all know that they're a frequent flyer in terms of needing care, or they're involved in a motor vehicle accident. Steve and I both serve as functional capacity evaluation experts in a legal standpoint. Going through this board certification really improved my skill set, because I see a heck of a lot of truck drivers that have caused accidents. And I'm also asked to make return to work determinations about their ability to return to various kinds of truck driving. So it's been just a great, it was not an easy board certification exam. And I learned more about other systems than probably the full exposure that someone would get like in an entry level program. So that's one of the reasons why the letters usually stipulate that they're qualified to practice if they've completed the mandatory continuing education process, which is about 12 to 15 hours of coursework.
And referral is part of the process if you identify some areas that the person has to, you know, beef up.
Exactly. And that's, you know, I've done over 1,000 of these, and there's probably about 10% of them will, you know, be referred either to a primary care doctor or their own, because there are issues with blood pressure or sugar showing up in their urine. Typically, I've had one case where the guy just had bizarre neurological findings going on, and I didn't certify him and told him he would need to go back to a neurologist.
So when I went before the Kentucky board, you know, there, just like Steve mentioned, there were questions about some of the more basic skills that actually doctors delegate to medical assistants, things like screening vision, doing dipstick urine, that kind of thing. And, you know, somebody made the point, well, we don't teach our students how to do vision screens. And I said, well, try getting a vestibular certification and not be able to screen someone for vision, you know. Hopefully you teach your students how to think, you know, and that they will master this additional continuing education course. Just like there's not room to cover every little thing in a PT, DPT curriculum. And so you have to, but it didn't take very long to learn how to do a Schnellen test and a lot of Whitford test. Mm-hmm. And I can even buy a machine for like less than $100 to analyze a dipstick urine test. So that's not really the point. The point is that usually people that have trouble with it, with driving kinds of issues, they've got neurological kinds of red or yellow flags, or they've got musculoskeletal complaints that don't allow them to properly grip and handle and control the wheel. And those are things that we're well qualified as physical therapists to do from a participation perspective.
Have you seen any PTs from Arizona that have wanted to apply for this?
I have one that has expressed interest to me from Arizona. The point I'm presenting to you as the board is that we didn't want things to happen like what happened to Steve, where the person went through it and then the licensing board was not educated. And Steve and I presented to the entire state federation of licensing boards a couple of falls ago about this issue. And we worked out a process with this Chloe Hernandez, who's with the Federal Motor Carrier Association, so that proactively we could educate the licensing board and get them to issue the letter that it's within the scope, even before an individual has to process through to do this, so that they don't encounter I got through this process in literally less than 2 months. Mm-hmm. But I was well connected in my state because I'd served on the board of physical therapy in the state. I knew most of the members of the licensing board, and they knew the circumstances of COVID and quickly expedited the clarification letter, where I was actually able to do that when my practice was completely shut down. We just don't want somebody else to be negatively impacted in the same way. And so that's why we've adopted a proactive strategy of educating every license. As far as we know, all licensing boards that have brought this issue forward have green highlighted the physical therapist ability to do that. But the database that the FMCA presents isn't always accurate. And so even after a licensing board issues the letter, we still have to check their database and make sure it's presenting properly for the licensing board that we've cleared to do this. So, but again, thank you for the opportunity to kind of educate you about this. I know that Arizona has been a very proactive state with regard to clarifying imaging privileges, which are in some respects a bit more complicated than what we're presenting to you about.
Sure. Personally, I'm not speaking for the board, but I'm all in favor of PTs practicing to the limit of their license. However, I am reminded that we do, as a board, do not have the statutory authority to create a position. If the board would like to go into executive session to discuss that, we can do that, or we can leave it with that statement at this point with the knowledge that we've gained from the presentation.
For clarity, the association is asking about this specifically for Arizona for it to happen.
Yes. Correct, Dr. Yes. The board of the association is in favor of moving forward with this. If there's an interested individual who wants to, or physical therapist who wants to take this on, go through this training and become certified, and if the board is in favor.
There's a packet that FMCSA sends out, you know, that contains all the documents. We've got a copy of that packet for, I think, one of the states that was just recently authorized, Idaho, or maybe it was Montana. But when an individual goes through, it triggers an automatically request from the federal government to clarify it one way or the other. So it is an official request that comes from the federal government that would be asked of the licensing board.
Also, one thing that I can add from what I'm seeing in Arizona, the current medical examiners that are approved appears to be physicians, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, advanced practice, RNs, and chiropractors.
Yeah.
Is what I'm seeing. Oh, naturopaths as well.
Yeah, there's a single athletic trainer or occupational therapist that's qualified to perform this. It's only been physical therapist in the disciplines that are not mentioned above.
Aaron, for your comment, then, is that a motion to move in executive session?
We can do that if you feel we need to. But at this point, we, again, don't have the statutory authority to create a position on this.
Okay.
And I guess, you know, unless that was challenged, I don't know. I don't know if Mr. Harris can comment on that, or how would somebody apply for this, Mr. Harris, and was there anything we can do about it?
Well, and I'm more than happy to go into executive session if the board has questions related to its authority and what it can and cannot do at this juncture.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've already maybe supplied some examples of letters from other state boards of physical therapy that did feel that was within their statutory authority.
Okay.
Yeah. And I certainly appreciate that. And, I don't want to speak on behalf of the board, but, you know, the board also has the letter that, your former executive director issued, I believe in 2021, and there has been no changes to the board's statutes. Related to its ability to provide position statements on its scope of practice. So there's really nothing, you know, statutorily that has changed, since it was originally presented to the board, or at least the last time it was presented to the board in 2021.
Can I ask a question on that? Or is that out of order?
If it's to me, it would probably be inappropriate. If it's a question to the board, we can, you know, do our best. You know, they can do their best to try to answer it, although I may ask them not to.
just, I guess, to the board, if you say you don't have a statutory authority to approve anything. So if you get a request from Department of Transportation of asking, is this in the scope of practice or not scope of practice? Can you, since you don't have statutory authority to approve, do you not have statutory authority to deny either? Is it dual sided?
Great question.
As I understand it, at that point, but what we can't do is take a position prior to having a case in front of us.
No. Am I correct there, you Mr. are. Harris?
So we need the test case.
Okay. So you need a test case, and then once you get a request from the Department of Transportation, then the board would evaluate that and make a determination based off of that.
Yeah, you know, the board may want to go into executive session for legal advice.
All right. I move that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Again, thank you very much for the opportunity to present. Yes.
Thank you. I think we have to vote, Monica.
Oh, yes. Sorry about that.
Okay.
It's been moved and seconded to go into executive session for legal advice. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone? Mr. Leone?
Sorry, I was muted. Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton, you're muted.
Sorry, I was muted. Yes.
Thank you. The motion passes. Great. Mr. Harris, I do not need to attend the executive session, do I?
No, Monica, you don't have to. If you can just kind of monitor.
Yeah. Perfect. We'll do. I'm going to stop the recording. It is 11:03.
Yeah. And Monica, though, you're more than welcome to, if you'd like to, on behalf of, you know, Judy.
Okay. Thank you.